If you're ready to confront your destiny, if this is the moment that you've been praying for, tune in and listen to your cosmic cheerleader, Commander Lady Athena, for cosmic pep talks for closet Christs. The show is the voice of the Ashtar Command. The call is for you to step forward into your greatness. Be listening on Wednesday. We have an appointment with destiny.
Greetings in the divine love of the one divine self. I'm Commander Lady Athena, and you're listening to the voice of the Ashtar Command, Cosmic Pep Talks for Closet Christs. This evening, our seminar topic is how we exit the physical body and manifest our ongoing life. How we exit the physical body and manifest our ongoing life. So, if you're ready, take a deep breath and just slide your higher awareness down to the top of your head and occupy your nervous system, your physical envelope. Flood your auric field with your sentiency, your awareness, your presence. Feel the energy inside your body. See if you can feel your whole energy field all at once. Inside your feet, your toes, your legs, ankles, all of your body. Feel that energy. Imagine that it has no limit. It's not defined by your skin suit. Practice feeling that inner body of energy. Practice experiencing pure awareness, pure witness, pure observation. Practice that, because that is the state that you'll carry with you when you exit your body, whether it's temporary through soul travel or the final exit when you're liberated. And that way, you can experience unlimited ecstasy even while you still imagine you're confined in a body in a time-space position on the timeline, okay? So where we are in our mind, in our heart, in our intention, there we are, regardless of where we happen to be physically parked, in this or any other dimension. Your intention has actually placed you where you are right now, both inwardly and outwardly. So take a moment and just notice where you are right now. What is your state inwardly? And just have a sense of your outer condition. You know, the home we all seek to return to is an inner state of awareness. And it is ever present and ever available. You don't have to go very far to be home. Home is simply the recognition that you've never left the heart of God. You've never left home. Creation is in what you call the heart of God. It can't leave its source. It's forever one with source. The whole belief system that we have somehow left as a spark or a fragment or a separate entity is an entire fiction. No such thing ever happened in highest truth, nor could it possibly happen because it's impossible. It's impossible. I'm not going to go into the why of that. Study the Course in Miracles and see what Jesus has to say about it. So home is simply the recognition that you're forever one with your divine source. You're perfect, you're whole, you're secure, you're safe. Nothing can harm you, touch you, or destroy you. And truth is simply knowing that. It's simply knowing that. It's simply knowing that your nature is indistinguishable from God. You are like a wave in the ocean of the all that is. The ocean is in the wave, and the wave is in the ocean. And you can't tell them apart, can you? Oh, they rise like a little bubble on the crest of the wave very briefly, and then the bubble pops. So what we call, quote, death is actually just a popping of the bubble that's on the crest of the wave. That's all. The body is a bubble. And the popping of the bubble simply releases you from temporary definition in form confinement into the all that is, into the everywhere. So I like to teach directly from my experience and what's going on in my life. And what's going on in my life is that my beloved companion that I've lived with for the last 7 years, who is my co-worker and co-minister, left his body 3 days ago for the final time. I mean, he was rarely in his body. He was always doing out-of-body work because he was a master soul. But this time he left for the final time. And some of you listening know of whom I speak. This is Matthew. And there was such a perfect rapport between us that we knew each other's thoughts and state of consciousness without even the need to speak. But our most favorite thing in the world was to go out to dinner and engage in intense conversations about states of consciousness, states of awareness, transcending states, shifting states, manifesting states. We've done that for, oh gosh, the better part of 30 years. And that was our fun. So it was interesting to me that I didn't notice much of it. I didn't notice any shift when he left. I really didn't. I didn't notice any shift. So when his brother came and told me that he not only was out of his body, he was out of it for good, we immediately went into the silence. Immediately, I tried to, I immediately went inward and connected with him. And he went to such an extremely high state of consciousness and spirit that it took me a while, because I have that wonderful gift of being able to talk and hear very clearly the voice of Sai Baba, the voice of my teacher, John Roger, the voice of Jesus, the voice of any one of the masters that I want to attune to. The voice of Ashtar. So when I contacted him, it was immediate, and his joy was indescribable. He had been extremely ill for, well, the better part of the 7 years that I had been sharing this home with him. But really the last 6 months, critically, very, very, very ill. And suffering tremendously. So when he left the body, it was like a relief tremendously for him and for us too, because who wants to see your loved one suffer? And he was finishing up a lot of things, not just his own personal things that he wanted to complete, but because his work was universal and galactic in nature, he was also clearing as much of the collective goop as he possibly could. So I asked him what had happened. I mean, really, you know, what went on? And John Roger is our master teacher here on earth. He's still in the body. And Matthew was in his recliner doing his spiritual work as he usually does, his characteristic out-of-body condition. And John Roger appeared to him and said, "Why are you still clinging to that worn-out body? Leave it and come with me." And so he did. It was just as simple as that. Now, as soon as we connected with Matthew, he began to joke. He loves to joke, particularly about things like death and taxes and, you know, all the stuff that people take so seriously. He has an outrageous sense of humor. So he began to joke, and he had us laughing so hard. I can't exactly quote what he said we should do with his body. Probably not over the airwaves. But you can imagine, you know, the fun that he had joking with about his physical body and, you know, what we were going to do with it. And that was Sunday night. But Matthew was with his brother Rick and I continually, comforting, joking, guiding us all day Monday and Tuesday as we made the final arrangements for his, you know, what to do with his physical remains. And the mood was so celebratory that if we had been drinkers, we would have popped a cork and had some champagne. But since that was not an option, we settled for some lemonade. But the whole mood was so upbeat, and none of us really felt sad. It was funny, I kept looking for that grief and that sadness and that feeling of loss, but it just didn't show up. Tuesday morning was a little different. When I woke up, I immediately tried to be really quiet because his bedroom is just separated from mine by a little wall, and I'm very conscious of being as quiet as I can so I don't disturb him. And so I'm tiptoeing, being really quiet, and then it suddenly hit me. Oh my gosh, he's gone for good. And then the tears started to fall, but very briefly. But I figured there would be some grief. I mean, there's a normal cycle of grief that we have that we really need to honor and be with and not try to stuff it. So I was going to honor my grieving, but it just cycled through really, really fast. And never has it been more clear to me that he was not that discarded body. It just, like, I couldn't even relate to that. He was so immediate, so present. I could hear him so clearly. I could sense his presence. It was like he just walked out of an old suit and left it on the floor. That's exactly what it was like. So I was talking to him, and it's funny, you know, when we ever talk to God or a departed loved one, isn't it funny how we look up? Why do we do that? I realized how silly it was to look up simply because I didn't know where to focus my eyes. You know, you notice that stuff. And then I suddenly was aware that he was sitting on the end of the bed right in front of me. And so then we had a nice conversation, as intense and as wonderful as we usually do. There was no difference whatsoever. And I asked him what his spirit was like in his present state. And he said, intention is everything. And intention immediately manifests here. Immediately. You see, intention also manifests here. But because we have a slowed down sequential unfoldment along the timeline, we're not aware immediately. You know, it builds up. You can look at your life as an overview, and based on where you are in your life, you can pretty well tell where your intention was or wasn't. Some people are very unfocused, but their lives are chaotic and show that lack of definition and focus. But when you're a master, you're very, very aware of being impeccable. And impeccable is being in the integration of your inner and outer self, so that there's a consistency between what you think, you feel, you speak, you believe, and your behavior. So Matthew and I are both Scorpios, which means we're intense, intense people to the max. Everything we do is like so intense. So as far back as I can remember, he has been really, really speaking a lot about intention and the importance of intention and how we need to really be aware of the intention that we hold when we want to manifest anything. And I remember that Sai Baba had said at one point to those of us that were with him that intention is God. Intention is God. In Sanskrit, it's called sankalpa, S-A-N-K-A-L-P-A, sankalpa, which basically means divine resolve. That when God sets his divine resolve, his sankalpa, his intention, everything must be as he wills. Actually, there's no such thing as a separate will from God. God's will is always done. The only one that thinks that that's not the case is the little ego, which is out on a, you know, an ego trip, thinking it has some separate wiggle room apart from God, thinking it has some separate existence apart from God. That's just a fictitious character. That eventually gives up and dissolves back into the wholeness. But since Matthew was a totally liberated master, there was nothing but intention. I mean, think about this. You leave your body, as he did, very consciously, and you're met by your master teacher, which is a really important to have a master teacher who takes responsibility for looking out for you so you don't get caught in some, you know, intermediate state that wouldn't be good for you. Make sure your master has the ability to do that, which ours does, thank goodness. So he was met by his master, but then, you know, it's like he had a free range, free choice. So what do you do when you're out of your body? You're in unlimited freedom. Just picture that for a minute. There's no time, no space, no limitation, no bodily hindrances, no pain. You're in a state of such indescribable love and freedom. But now what? Now what? Well, that's where your intention comes in. Now, Matthew and I, especially me, I've been working with John Rogers since I was 12. So literally for my whole life, I have been in training to work out of body in soul travel or soul expansion, however you want to look at that, in divine states of consciousness. And Matthew's been at least half that amount of time himself. So we were really, really trained in moving our spiritual inner awareness according to intention. And the intention for Matthew and I for our whole lives has been to be of unconditional loving service to all life. So nobody tells a master, a liberated being, what to do or where to go. You know, if you're not awakened yet, then you will go to an intermediate state, which is kind of like a big college campus, okay? There's lots of classes and lots of training that goes on. You have an afterlife review. You have all of that stuff. But you see, he bypassed all of that. He didn't need a life review. He was conscious. He was liberated. And he's the first soul that I have personally been so close to that attained liberation in this lifetime. So it was interesting to talk to him about what it was like. But, you know, as a funny analogy, I kind of think it's like being a 1,000-pound canary. You're on the sky. So what happens is that you're free to manifest literally anything, anywhere, but it's always according to what calls you. You're called or evoked. You're called forward into responding to need. That need is always extending service to someone, somewhere. And you're attuned to a particular field, let's say, of consciousness, where you respond to that wavelength when there's a need. And your essence simply goes forward to be of service because your intention is unconditional loving service to all life. And so, wherever you're evoked or called forward, there you will manifest a form appropriate to that planet, that galaxy, that universe, that situation, whatever, because you're not limited anymore to how you looked in your last embodiment. If you appear to your loved ones, then generally you will appear in a form they can recognize. But that's just to accommodate them. That's not because you're limited to that form or have to take that form. So how do we leave our physical body? Well, we do it every day, a gazillion times. Just nobody has really told you clearly that you're working out of body. Let me give you a good example. You wake up in the morning and you're not a morning person. Why? You feel grumpy. You don't want to talk to anybody. You want to head for the coffee pot and leave me alone and don't speak unless you come with a steaming cup of coffee. Some people are like that. I'm not, but then I'm used to going in and out of the body. But when you're grumpy like that, it's because you, as a soul, are out of your body. And the little kid, the body elemental or basic self, is left home alone tending the house, and you're gone. And like any little kid, it doesn't like that. So never pass judgment on yourself when you just feel really out of sorts and grumpy and fuzzy-headed. Just go, you know, eat some breakfast, have your coffee, and notice then how you feel really quite good. And then some people are like me that just always feel joyful. Happy, close to God. I don't notice that other state. But there again, I've been practicing doing this for many decades, so that should be, you know, par for the course. So here are some of the ways that we leave our bodies every day. We leave our bodies every time we fall asleep, whether it's a cat nap or all night, okay? We externalize from our bodies every time we undergo anesthesia, like if you have an operation or whatever. The reason you don't feel the pain is because your soul abstracts out of the nervous system and hovers out of the body while the body is being operated on. You exit your body when you faint or experience a sudden shock or extreme terror. We exit our bodies always prior to an accident or a criminal assault or attack. Nobody's ever in their body when they die, ever, ever, ever. And that's why sometimes people will undergo a terrific accident. They'll wake up in the hospital, sometimes, coming out of a coma, and they'll say, well, what happened? And somebody will say, well, you know, you were hit by a truck and your motorcycle was whatever. And they won't remember anything. That's because they were abstracted fully from their bodies. And that's why time seems to go into slow motion. Those of you like myself who have been in an accident, notice how everything goes into slow motion. and you have unlimited time to pray, to attune yourself to God, to help whoever's around you, you go into a very divine state, in my experience anyway. Or why a person doing a near-death experience or while under anesthesia often remembers looking down on their body, on the operating table, or being able to see and hear everything that is going on. Rick, Matthew's brother, had just returned home Sunday night from seeing the movie Heaven is for Real. And that's the story of a little boy who died and went to heaven and met his sister, whom his mother had miscarried and never told him about her. And she introduced herself and she said, "I died when I was in your mommy's tummy. I'm your sister." And he met his grandfather, whom he had never met. And the grandfather came up and said, "You must be a Colton, my grandson." And when later the father, you know, he told his father, you know, couldn't believe it. So he showed a picture of the grandfather and asked if it was him. And the little boy said no, because it was an old picture, you know, looked like an old man. And then he thought, I wonder if it was when he was younger. So he went and got a picture of the grandfather when the grandfather was young, and the little boy immediately said, "Yes, that's Pops. Yes, that's him." So even though the father was a pastor, like many times is the case, it was all book knowledge but no direct experience. And so it was very, very impactful for the pastor and his wife, who were the parents of this little boy, to have this little boy tell them, verify things that are in the scriptures that, of course, he would have no way of knowing, and confirm their own faith. So we also leave our bodies when we're daydreaming or being someplace else. And when you're like daydreaming, we actually go there mentally. Sometimes it's called mental projection, but it's actually, you actually are wherever you're focused. Now, if you can hold that focus 100% of being somewhere else, you will actually bilocate there. That's how I told you one time I bilocated to Sai Baba's ashram in India. Because with every part of my being, heart, mind, body, and soul, I wanted to be there. And suddenly I found that I was there, very physically. That was a total bilocation. You might have remembered the film Somewhere in Time, where actor Christopher Reeves projected himself into another period of time to find his beloved of an earlier generation. And I've had that experience myself several times. So I know how it feels and how it works. But it was interesting. The times I experienced it, I wasn't trying to. I simply was, in one case, walking down the street in Santa Barbara, California, when all of a sudden everything turned into the turn of the century. It was 1800-something. And everything was there were gas lamps, you know, gas lights. There were the horses' hooves clattering down the street, pulling their carriages. Everything, just for an instant, shifted into that other place and time. Now, you can also leap. Some of you have seen the movie Leaper, or time jump into another time, place, and one of your many, many incarnations, which are separated only in different time spokes of the wheel of time, let's say. They're all concomitant. They're all incurring at the same time. But bear in mind, I do not advise that ever. Why? Because without a master and without really someone who takes responsibility for your out-of-body travels, you could actually step into another dimension and not get back here, not be able to return here. So don't mess around. Don't mess around with this stuff. Just leave these things alone. But notice that when you are out of your body, sometimes this is very common, those of us that work with the Ashtar Command, you'll feel sometimes a tremendous drowsiness in the middle of the day. And fight it as much as you will, you can't not go to sleep. Sometimes people complain about that. Don't complain. You're being called to be of service. The stuff that you do down here doesn't matter tiddlywinks. It's not your job down here. Your job here is just to anchor conscious presence and love. That's it. The rest is just, keeping, the body fed and potted and slept and whatever. But that's not why you're here, to, body sit and take care of the physical body. It's just a means of showing up so you're visible here. That's it. But the real work is the work that you do inwardly in consciousness as a soul, as a presence, as an essence, as a part of the way God shows up and ministers. So when you feel that sudden drowsiness, just, lie down. Very seldom they'll do it when you're at work. Usually they'll do it when you're not doing anything important. And so you just go with it. Just go with it. They'll target the weekends very often. It can come on you at any time. I'm practiced now to where, I'm out of the body even all the time, and I'm also present here, so I don't have to make, a special alteration of what I'm doing to be out of my body and doing my work. And that's a practice which you can develop by being aware that that's what you're doing. So what happens when you die? There's really no such thing, but we think we die. It looks like people die, okay? So let's just look at this. Someone asked Sai Baba, and Sai Baba said that the sum total of your consciousness takes form as your afterlife experience. Your sum total of consciousness takes the form of your afterlife experience. So our mind creates every state in which we find ourselves, whether we're in the physical or any other dimension. Now, I want to speak about heaven and hell. The Pope, not too long ago, excuse me, let me clearing some people's fear here. The Pope, not too long ago, mentioned that heaven and hell are states of mind. Well, all of the gurus know that. All of the masters know that. It's nice that the traditional church has now acknowledged that, because I think probably the traditional church is the one that has made everyone so freaking scared of it, especially from the artwork of the Middle Ages. When I was in London, I went to an exhibit at the National Gallery, which was called Seeing Salvation. And they had room after room after room of Christ and the calling out of the tombs of the dead. And some of the imagery, I just sat there on those little benches and I looked at it and I thought, good heavens, what a strange belief system. Because it would show, the angel sounding the last trumpet and people literally crawling out of their graves and their clothes, whatever they were wearing at the time they died or were buried. And it was so bizarre. I thought, where do people get this idea? And it's because they're very, very attached to the idea that they are a body. They don't think of the body as energy, as, atoms, with mostly space. I mean, we're only like a fraction of 1% any kind of matter. We're mostly space and water. That's basically what the body is. The body is our history. It's our conditioning. It's the energies that we've identified with, and thus we've owned them, and they occupy us, but it's just a field of consciousness. It's not solid at all. So heaven and hell are states of mind that are temporary. In theosophy, they're called devakan. Particularly the heavenly states are devakan. And that's where you go to receive the merit. Like if you're a good person, have lived a good life, have done a lot of service, you're not awakened yet, you're still sound asleep, but, you know, you've lived a good life. You have a reward for that. You know, you get to enjoy, let's say, a vacation. It's not a state where you can do any transformation, but it's a vacation where you can enjoy whatever it is that you enjoy and, you know, want to have be involved with. But after a certain period of time, that merit is so, you know, you've gotten your just dues, and you have to come back again until you awaken spiritually. So that's a temporary state. And when it comes to hell, let's say, for example, you do not believe in anything. You hate God and don't want to have any kind of relationship with God. So you create a state, and say, for example, you're completely turned off from any thought of love. Let's say you're just really a hate-filled, angry, vengeful person that's living in hell, even though they're still in the body. So when they die, they go into that same state because, number one, they don't want to have an experience of God or love or oneness or joining. But that's a temporary state, too. And many people who've had a near-death experience and gone into a hell state that were atheists by confession, that didn't believe in love, that believed that you were alone and, you know, when you die, that's it. Well, of course, that's impossible. Found themselves in a state of hell. But the minute, it was interesting because one man described that when he was in that state and he was descending into this awful pit with these demonic-looking creatures with claws reaching for him, he heard the voice of his praying mother, his Christian mother, saying the Lord's Prayer over his bed. And he kept hearing an inner voice saying, "Say the words, say the words." And so as he started to say the Lord's Prayer, he started to feel his body lift above that state, and he survived. And that's a story of many, many. I've read many, many, many of these after near-death experiences or people who've come back from those states. And even the most wretched person, if they call out to God, to Jesus, to Christ, instantly the Lord comes. And the Bible says, whosoever calls upon the name of the Lord will be saved. That's actually, absolutely, totally true. So no matter what state you're in, if you call upon the Lord, the Lord will come, must come, always comes, no exception. So that's why it's so important not to deny that there is a God, that there is love. And even though you may not understand any of that stuff or even believe it, just give it enough wiggle room so that the experience of eternity is another thing. Eternity does not mean a long time. The experience of eternality or infinity is simply the absence of time reference. There's no experience of time when you're out of the body. That is purely a function of the human brain. So when you're in any state, it looks like it's forever. It just feels, and experientially, it's like foreverness. So there's no time and no sense of passing time and no beginning and no ending in the spirit worlds. But masters who work out of time entirely have the freedom to step in and out of manifestation as they are evoked in service. They have no limitation. They can go anywhere at any time. They literally exist in an omnipresent state in the highest levels of God realization. They're omnipresent, but they can focalize presence in any place in the timeline or in the time cell of history. So all states of perceived separation from love or God, these are all states of the ego, the false self, which is the very embodiment of the belief in separation. Now, hell is a false state. That's an important thing to bear in mind. However, this state of being, believing we're a human being, is also a false state, and yet experientially it sure seems real, doesn't it? It's maya, it's samsara, it's illusion, and yet it sure seems real, doesn't it? So just know that you don't want to go to that state that's defined as hell, which is isolation and an experience of being separate from love and separate from God. Just don't even go there. And to make sure you don't go there, you might want to ask Jesus Christ into your heart or the presence of love, God's love, in your heart. And see what happens. But we know that whoever does that has a connection with the Lord that he has promised. He will never leave you, he will never forsake you, and he will meet you and escort you at the time of your death. So don't mess around with these things. If you don't know what you're doing and you don't know what you believe and you don't have a really good master, you better just play it safe and ask the Lord into your heart, the love of God into your heart, and all will be well. Now, hell is definitely a state of mind that one creates by passing over in a state of violent negativity, hate-filled life, drug crazies, full of anxiety, fear, worries. Jesus the Christ and Satya Sai Baba, John Roger, the spiritual travelers, the Mahanta, the head of Ekankar, all of these masters have promised to escort their chelas, their students, at the time of death, so that they do not get caught in any of the hellacious states or the purgatorial states. So that's the value of putting your life in the care of a bona fide, true teacher. Sai Baba has said that it's very difficult to find a real teacher today. Most of them, he said, are platform heroes and spiritual zeros, and they're full of ego. So he said, in this age, the best thing to do is to take God himself as your master. And, of course, Jesus is, you know, same thing. Jesus, God. Jesus was an incarnation of God, appearing as the Son. But Jesus was actually one with God. So I've spoken on that years ago. I haven't spoken too much about it recently, but we're talking about something very serious. And, you know, Matthew's passing was so sudden. He was aware that he probably was on his way out. We were aware because he wasn't seeming to get better, but was still, you know, just getting sicker and sicker. And he's completed. I mean, he was a liberated soul, so there was really no reason for him to hang around and just suffer. But for most people, they don't know. They don't know when they're going to go. And Baba said that death is like a cameraman. You always have to be prepared for that snapshot. And the state that you are in at the time of your passing is very, very significant. That's why in India, they're taught to repeat the name of the Lord, in Tibet, so that at the very last moment, the name of the Lord will come to your mouth, and you will go to that name, because the name of the Lord and the form of the Lord are one. And Baba said, take any name, any form, they're all the same name and the same form of the one and only God. No, they're different names and different forms, but they're of the one and only God. So he says it doesn't matter, but I will take his word for that. Now, the purgatorial realms are also states of consciousness where souls reenact over and over and over again violent and traumatic events until something or someone can get their attention and awaken them beyond their trance. They're like they're so caught up in that enactment, they're not aware. When we would travel and tour and do workshops back on the East Coast, there are so many spirits there, astral forms, and purgatorial enactments taking place from, I think, we had some of the wars. I used to see these soldiers in red suits everywhere, and I would often see the people when they were in my workshops. They would transfigure, and I could see them as they were at the time of various wars or the Civil War or whatever. So many of those souls died in that land in one of the wars and reincarnated again. But I just dreaded going into the motels because they always were haunted. And one night, we were in a motel, and I couldn't sleep because we were on a plot of land that had formerly been a burial ground for Civil War soldiers. And right at the head where I was lying down trying to sleep in that space, they were fighting and fighting and fighting. And finally I thought, well, what can I do to help them? So I got out my copy of The Course in Miracles, and I started to read to them. I couldn't get their attention. I tried everything to get their attention. Finally, I was able, with the help of Jesus and some of the angels, to pierce them in some way so that they could, that state they were in, which is like a bubble, a dense bubble, I was finally able to get their attention. And as I read The Course of Miracles, the angels could get into that state and escort them out of it. But I worked all night to do that. You know, it was really, really hard to get their attention. It was like they couldn't see you, they couldn't hear you. You had to bring something into their field that they associated with love. And often that was a pet. So anyway, that was my experience. So the heavenly states, the purgatorial states, the hell states, they're all temporary. And once one has experienced the whatever, one must return to another life until one awakens spiritually beyond the body, the identification with concepts, anything that binds you to an attachment in the illusion of separation. You know, we get attached to identifying ourselves in terms of separation. And that's what causes the bondage. So it's actually your small story that's keeping you bound. You know, it's your small story. It's your unhappy self. So you have to ask yourself, why are you so attached to your unhappy self? I'm retelling its tiny little story over and over and over and defending it at all costs. You know, your small story usually has the major theme of look what they're doing to me, poor little me, or look what they've done to me. Look at how much I'm suffering from this or that condition or situation or relationship or circumstance. You know, catch the theme. Poor little me, I'm suffering. I'm suffering what shouldn't be happening to me because. And here the ego will fabricate a story about what a good person it is and how much it has done and how ungrateful they are. You know, we've all done this. We all have that little poor me lurking somewhere. So really watch it and see if you can catch yourself when you go into your small story character. And we all have this story, and we've convinced ourselves that it's true. And that is what is blocking us from going beyond to the truly, truly fulfilling beingness that is our natural state. And that, you know, that true beingness is bigger than any possible story we could ever come up with. So really look at what you're making such a big deal out of it. And is it really worth having to come back here again and again and again and giving your life for? So light workers also make up small stories about what they, the Illuminati, the cabal, the evildoers, or whatever, are doing to the world, doing to the food, doing to the air, doing to the earth, doing to the animals, doing to others, etc., etc. But if you watch it, it's just all a bunch of small story complaining that's projected on the world, but there's no changing. Like I mentioned last week, there is no transformation that you can bring out of your lower self, and it's complaining. Only the Holy Spirit can bring about transformation, and that has to start with each individual. So to even catch yourself telling your small story and to become suddenly aware of it is the beginning of its dissolution. This is what's so important. Observe how there's a part of your mind that's always aware, apart from the one that's narrating the pity me story. And just watch without judging or commentary. Pay attention to the two states of consciousness operating at the same time. This is your meditation that you can do any time. And notice how that one that's the narrator is like a pre-recorded tape. Notice how that part has become an unconscious narrator. You could call it the storyteller. And now notice that there is one observing and consciously aware of this storyteller. And that's you. That's you. That's you is that higher awareness, that witnessing awareness. And this is how you, as the divine presence, the soul, is awakening that part of the mind that has fallen asleep and become lost in the dream scenario of separation. So you as a soul bring the light of awareness into that part of your mind that has become unconscious and is caught up in conditioning and habit. Isn't that glorious? Don't you think that's just the most glorious thing? So that unconscious part of the mind is the part that keeps manifesting as lack and insufficiency in your life. At some point, it becomes conditioned to believe that there's just not enough and that it has to struggle to survive. And this is how karmic patterns of negativity can be passed on from generation to generation of ongoing poverty. So poverty is the manifestation of a belief in there not being enough and that one's needs will not be met. And that's what Jesus was pointing out when he said that to those who have, more will be added, whereas those who lack, the little they have will be lost. Haven't you noticed that when you lose your job or are down to very little money in your account, your car also tends to demand unexpected repairs? Or your household appliances break down? Or suddenly you need to go to the dentist? Why? Because the loss of a job, translated in your mind, is a lack of means, and fear arose. And the belief in lack and insufficiency, coupled with fear, simply manifested according to your mental belief and emotional state. You see, you are exercising the intention that come hell, high water, or the apocalypse, you're going to make it. You're going to do it, whatever needs to be done, but you are not going to be lacking. So you see, it's done unto us as we believe. Whatever we are within this vast universe, we manifest according to what our consciousness state is. And that's what the Bible shows us, that we shall decree a thing, and it shall be done according to our word. As a man thinks in his heart, so shall he be. So realize that every thought, every mood, every attitude, every feeling will create in like kind. Every word you speak is creative. Your small story will manifest and keep manifesting as long as you keep it going and alive. So be aware of that and step free. You can do it. You have that choice. Let's take a deep breath and go out with one nice Anahi Hu. Anahi.